It allows leaders to prioritize because they can say, hey, out of 100,000 calls that happened last week, I can see that 40% of them are negative sentiment calls. And if I drill into that, 10% of those are customers complaining about our bill paying process.
Welcome to the Business of AI in Healthcare podcast. Our mission is to discuss practical insights and share knowledge on how to navigate the transformative technology of AI. It is important to understand how AI can be used safely and ethically while revolutionizing patient care, streamlining operations, and enhancing medical research. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Kaiser. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting app to ensure you don't miss any of the featured episodes. You can also join us online at thebusinessofaiinhealthcare.com. Today, we take our virtual podcast to the heartland of America, to my hometown of Indianapolis. Joining us today is Amy Brown, CEO of Authentics. Amy's going to take us on a mission to help humans understand humans. Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's so great to be here.
Help humans understand humans. Now, that seems like a pretty tall order, and it reminds me of a story. An innovative engineer. No, she was an entrepreneur, and she found Aladdin's lamp, and the genie quickly informed her that she would get one and only one wish. And being terrified of flying over the ocean, she wanted to drive to Hawaii and asked the genie for a drivable road from the continent. The enraged genie barked back and stated how difficult that would be, a nearly impossible requirement for all the steel and the concrete that would be needed. Choose something else. Okay, how about a way for humans to understand humans instead? Would you like a two-lane or a four-lane road? So, Amy, you're better than the genie. Tell us about Authentics and your mission to help humans understand humans.
Yes, that's a great story. Thanks for sharing that. So, Authentics is a company that listens and helps healthcare organizations listen at scale. And what we mean by that is, you know, companies, whether they're health insurance companies or providers or pharmaceutical companies, they're talking to customers, namely patients or healthcare consumers every day by the tens of thousands, millions really per day in that industry. And those conversations are typically recorded. And so those conversations flow into our platform, and we are a software company that uses artificial intelligence and natural language understanding to really listen at the kind of the universe level of all those conversations and find themes and topics that healthcare companies really want to know about. And then we have a part of our product that allows human users to go much deeper in subsets or samples of conversations so they can really truly understand the customer, the patient, the provider, whoever it is they're talking to.
Okay, so let me try to get this really well established in my mind at least. Now, I understand that every time I call in somewhere, it always says, this is being recorded for quality purposes and yes, or for training purposes. And my experience has been that this is being recorded because somebody might escalate this and you need to document that the conversation was the way it was. And they may not be looking at this quality message that they're trying. I think most of this stuff becomes dead data. It's like, yeah, tons and tons and tons of data that's in a coma. And what use is it? I mean, is it really worthwhile? Now, I'm sure there's arguments that people say, no, no, we build quality from this and we do this and we do that. But if I hear you right, you're saying that you have a modern method of going to this data and extracting useful information using machine learning. Is that right?
You've got it. You've got it. And you're right that the traditional use of recorded conversational data is for kind of ad hoc escalation reasons. And that data is largely stored and ignored just for those kind of use cases, those anecdotal use cases. My background is in healthcare operations. And in that work, I started becoming really familiar with the content of these conversations that we were recording every day. And it became really clear to me that there were actually amazing things happening in these conversations. The rest of the industry thinks of operations as the cost center, and they assume that customer service is just very transactional. Customer has a need, agent solves the problem, move on to the next call. But the reality is, these are human conversations about healthcare, and there are all kinds of things that patients, customers are saying about what their needs are, what they love, what they hate, what they wish the company would do better, what their disease state is like. It's fascinating. And I just came to realize that, hey, the rest of the healthcare organization is missing out. They're missing out on insights that can actually help them improve healthcare outcomes and drive the business forward.
So all the golden nuggets are being left behind. All the really interesting data that could make a difference is not being harvested at all. It's just being left behind. So if we go back, you know, we like feedback. We say that feedback is a gift. You know, we always like to say that feedback is a gift and that feedback is very valuable to us. But most of the feedback that we get nowadays, I think it's been somewhat filtered. There's this thing called the Net Performance Score. And I think everybody's heard of that before, the NPS, Net Performance Score. And I think it was developed like 20 years ago. I think Bain developed that. And it's more of a marketing referral tool. And you know, we do customer SAT surveys and we do surveys about the surveys and all this stuff gets so filtered. There's got to be something better in terms of context when you end up with unfiltered feedback. Is that what you're gathering?
That's exactly right. So again, as I was in my corporate career, that was when the customer experience industry was really taking off. They were growing based on this theory that in order to understand what customers think, that they have to ask them. So they developed these survey mechanisms. And the problem with that is, well, there's so many problems with it. The first is that it's a skewed data source because typically only customers who feel like taking the extra time to complete a survey are the ones that are completing it. And so oftentimes that's folks who are very angry or very happy. So it's fractional amount of data going in. It's also limited to whatever the survey metric is. So it might be a numeric value in the case of the Net Promoter Score, or it might be, you know, a numeric value plus maybe a line of text explaining their score. It's just not enough context for leaders to be able to solve massive business problems with a fractional set of data that's skewed. And you know, leaders ask themselves all the time, well, I see that our CSAT score is X, but I don't know why. So the contextual data in those conversations really provides the why behind customer sentiment, customer satisfaction.
You know, at the university here, all the courses that we teach, executive ed, you know, we have adult learners. And the tradition used to be, let's try to get some type of survey back with a Likert scale. You know, basically, how did you like this from a scale from 1 to 5? And they click on things like that. And, you know, you get those surveys back and you look at it and everybody said they liked the course, but you didn't get the context that you're talking about. And so we decided to change things up and said, instead of doing that type of survey, we have them write out in text. We had them write a short statement. What were your principal takeaways from this class? What have you learned? What have you developed? What resonated with you? And how do you plan to use this in your professional life? And that data is so rich. And I think that's what you're doing here. You're gathering all of this data. And all this data, sometimes I call it infotoxology. It's so much data, it's just toxic. And it's just laying there. But you actually analyze it and you activate it. So when you activate it, give me some examples of what activated data looks like when you pull this data out of a coma and you bring life to it.
Yes, I like how you said that. Yeah, so 80% of the world's data is unstructured. Unstructured is, you know, what you described, those notes. So you asked questions in your survey, thoughtful questions, and you got thoughtful responses. The problem is it's free text, right? That's unstructured data. So in order to really summarize it, aggregate the take-home messages, you have to create some structure out of that unstructured data. Well, conversational data sources like recorded phone calls are also unstructured data. And so what we do is we take that data into our platform in the raw audio file format, we transcribe it, and then we apply algorithms. Algorithms in the way of rule-based classifiers or machine learning models that are listening for key themes and topics. These are mathematical models that our engineers have designed based on our understanding of the healthcare industry. So we have humans that listen to the conversations and not only can understand the language, meaning English, for example, but they also have worked in the healthcare setting. And so when they structure this data, they are creating categories, labels, and starting to create meaningful, useful structure to this data. And that's how we kind of go about the way of organizing it. Now, in terms of activation, our clients want to know things like, hey, where are our customers getting stuck in their relationship with us? Where are they not successfully filling their prescription? Or why aren't they paying their bill on time? These are the types of questions they want to know because they're trying to optimize speed and value, et cetera. Well, the keys to that are in the listening, because what we do is we say, okay, this set of conversations indicates customer friction related to bill paying, and our clients are able to quantify that and then drill deeper to listen to some calls, a small sample of calls that are statistically representative of that theme that's in the data. So it allows leaders to prioritize because they can say, hey, out of 100,000 calls that happened last week, I can see that 40% of them are negative sentiment calls. And if I drill into that, 10% of those are customers complaining about our bill paying process. I have an initiative to change our bill paying process. I'm going to go listen strategically at that targeted set of interactions so I can start to understand the real nature of the problem and then go implement change.
So this is called speech analytics, is that right?
That's a component of what we do, yes, speech analytics.
Okay, now you're talking about problems, bad news, things that are wrong. Can you also extract good news where people are pleased as well?
Absolutely, and that's my favorite aha moment of me becoming a founder and doing this work. I, of course, set out to help companies solve problems to improve the healthcare system. But what's been so delightful to discover is that these conversations have all kinds of beautiful stories. Customers who are thanking the agent on the other side of the phone for helping them or saving their life. We hear testimonials about healthcare providers or certain medications, and people are really pouring their heart out. In some ways, customers think of the person on the other end of the phone as a lifeline in an otherwise hugely complex healthcare system. And so some of our clients have started utilizing our platform and this data to remind the whole organization of their noble cause, why they should get out of bed in the morning, and to recognize and support the key team members who are making that happen.
You refer to quite often in the things I've read about Authentics is that you do things at scale. Kind of give our audience a better definition of what that truly means when you look at things at scale.
Yeah, there are other speech analytics companies that are really focused on the one-to-one interaction. How do we identify when a customer is getting angry in a situation, maybe escalate that call to a supervisor and intervene at that one-to-one level? What we're saying is, hey, that's great, but you also need to look at the forest. You need to zoom out at the whole of your conversations and start to understand the big thematic things that are causing pain or delight or anything in between for your business and for the health outcomes that we're all striving to achieve. And so one way we think about scale is this idea of a macro lens at conversational data and using all of it, 100% of it to tell a truth-telling story versus just kind of a random pull of individual interactions to try to understand what's really going on. So scaling your understanding. Another way we think about scale is through speed without yet adding human capital. So if, you know, if a company wanted to listen to 100% of its interactions, they could hire an army of human beings, right, to listen manually to every interaction. But we're using artificial intelligence and machine learning models, not to replace human capital, but to make that human capital that is there more efficient by funneling the interactions that are most meaningful to the business to those human beings. So they're not wasting time, trying to tell a story from a data that's just like a C. You know, we essentially help them find needles in haystacks, and that allows human capital to scale.
Okay, so let's go through a little example. Let me pretend that I run a significant call center in the healthcare space. And let's just say that I'm an insurance company. If I was talking to you, Amy, and said, I understand that you have a modern method here. We're not looking at 20-year-old technology with some type of NPS system and survey system. We're not looking at customer sat surveys, but you've got a modern method using some advanced technology to help. You're going to tell me, you're going to help me learn more about my call center in particular. And as the owner of that, what I'd like to know is, what's working? Because I want to keep doing that. And I want to know what's not working so I can stop doing that. And I'd also like to know what I'm not doing, what I need to start doing. Can your system actually come back and start to give me some referential information about my environment? I mean, how much data do you have to sample and how long does that take? Because I'd really be interested if this can make a big difference. Take my old data and resurrect it and make it vibrantly alive that I can do stuff with, that'd be very valuable to me.
Yeah, Bob, those are all questions that we hear every day from our clients. And the answer is yes, we can answer those questions by studying the data that you already have within your contact center. In terms of size and what it takes, it kind of depends on the question you're trying to answer. Sometimes we have clients that want to give us 100% of their calls, and they may be very, very large insurance companies that take, you know, tens of millions of interactions a year, and they want to answer all kinds of questions with a great deal of certainty. Then we have other clients that are more market research or, marketing related. They don't need the universe. They just want to study a particular business line or a particular brand or product portfolio, right? So we work with our clients to determine what's the right volume of data to take into our platform. In terms of sampling out a subset to listen to with actual human ears, we recommend something that is statistically representative, statistically valid. And we, again, work with our clients to do that because what we want to be sure is that when we're investing human ears into a listening exercise, that we can be highly confident that what's heard is reflective of the whole so that you can make real business decisions based on it.
Okay. That really helps me understand that process a whole lot better. So let's talk about machine learning a little bit. You're a technology company, right? Is that how you would present yourself as a technology company?
Yes. We typically say that we are a B2B SaaS company, software as a service, and tech for short.
Okay. Are there bias issues that you have to be concerned about when you start to look at data like this?
You know, there's bias always in everything. That said, we work really hard to try to remove bias from our artificial intelligence. And here's why and how we do that. The way in which we've trained our machine learning models is by employing human beings that come from a diverse set of backgrounds, right? They have different demographics. They have different experiences working in the industry of healthcare. And they bring their own paradigm to Authentics. they all listen, their employees, full-time employees, they listen and have been listening for 4 years now to hundreds and hundreds of thousands of interactions and begin to create structure by tagging and labeling them. They calibrate with each other every week to make sure that all the diverse perspectives on what's going on in a conversation are taken into consideration as they train this data. And so because of the approach we've taken with diversity, as well as humans that understand the context of these types of conversations, we believe that our AI is going to be more useful and meaningful to our healthcare clients.
Speaking of healthcare, obviously this could become a gold standard to really help improve some of the issues that we're confronted with. If you ask people in general, what's your experience with the healthcare industry? That's a very broad industry. You can get specific and say, how do you like your primary care doctor? Or how do you like your health plan? How do you like your pharmacy? All those types of things. You can start to break it down into a little bit more detail. But in general, people would say the healthcare system is not very efficient. It's not very well coordinated. There's a lot of conflict, and the conflict is a growth industry. It just seems like more and more and more. And so I could see where this could help not only the provider and the payer, but the patients, the customers, and even the family experience. What are some of the most complicated scenarios that you see individuals and patients get caught in, and how do you identify those?
Oh my gosh, the Eddie effect. Yes. Yeah, so we work with these three main verticals: pharma, payers, providers, and human beings. Healthcare consumers are being bounced around all three of those just to get very simple things done. So a really good example is you go to your doctor's office and they prescribe a medication. You walk out thinking that you're going to go get that medication filled. You learn that, oops, your insurance company doesn't cover that medication without a prior authorization. You go back to your doctor to get a prior authorization form completed. Then you wait and you wait and you hope that that makes its way to the insurance company. Sometimes you find out that the fax was never received. You need to go back to your doctor, have it refaxed to the insurance company, wait for the insurance company to say whether or not they approve. They may conditionally approve and say, hey, we want you to try these other medications first. Please go back to your doctor, ask them to prescribe another medication. Doctor says, well, I don't really want to prescribe that other medication because I know that one won't work. And you just go back and forth, and the customer is stuck in the middle navigating all of this because the two systems don't talk to each other. And all the while, the symptoms are continuing. Who knows? Maybe that customer has to go to the ER, one night because their symptoms are so bad. And now we've got an ER visit, which costs more than just getting the medication filled, right? So these are just so common, happen all the time, and customers are stuck and suffering, and we have the most expensive healthcare system in the world.
Wow, well stated. Thank you for sharing that. So are you staying entirely focused on healthcare? Because I was just thinking, what about the airline industry? What about all these other conflict industries where confusion, communication, perception is always messed up? Are you narrowly focused to be specifically in the healthcare area with this technology?
That's a great question, and one I get all the time, particularly from investors who are curious about that question.
Yes.
What I'd say is I believe that our product and approach to listening and using artificial intelligence is applicable and transferable to any industry. That said, for now, Authentix is staying in healthcare squarely because we believe that having the healthcare expertise is allowing our models, our machine learning models, to be very useful to the healthcare industry. And we found that it's helping us create a moat, if you will, with competitors, and that it's creating credibility and trust with our buyers. And so for now, we're going to stay right where we are in healthcare.
You said the magic word, trust. How do you get people to trust the data that you give them? What's involved with that?
I love that question. Well, it involves both and. It involves both quantified data that has a high level of confidence using measures and methods we have within our platform to demonstrate confidence level of a model. And it also requires listening. And I want to tell you a quick story. So we were presenting data to a boardroom, and you know, these were C-level individuals who were, you know, fascinated with AI and technology and this cool tech stuff going on at Authentix, and they wanted to see all the problems that were going on in their company and also what was going well, right? So we show our platform with data visualizations and graphs and charts and all of this. And that was great because leaders could use their brains and see what was going on these charts and graphs and start to really understand the problem. But we also have a part of our product that actually allows leaders to listen in a really efficient way. Our product segments and clips audio segments of the conversation that illustrate a theme in the data. So let's say the theme is frustration about claims. Well, that's what the situation was in this boardroom, right? And so we pulled up a compilation of audio clips of 10 patients expressing their frustration about the claims process. And they were tightly bound together in about a 1 minute audio clip. And when we played that for this team of executives, you could see emotion, you could see anger, you could see tears. And it's kind of like when you hear something, you just can't unhear it.
Yes.
And so what we found is that it's the combination of this quantified visual data that all business people need in order to know what they're working on is right, with the emotive voice that is really inciting action.
So that creates what you call a smart sample then, right? I mean, you can actually figure out and present to a group to give them a good, tangible, visceral feeling for what's going on in their organization.
That's right. We call it a multi-sensory experience.
I love stories like that. It reminds me, there was a consultant that went to a large manufacturing company. They had a very inefficient procurement group, and he found out that they were buying a particular type of glove, you know, from 20 different vendors at 20 different prices. And he went in to present it to the board, and he showed the graphs and the charts and all that stuff. And they all fell asleep and said, that's nice. Didn't get any action out of them. So the next time they had the meeting, he brought in and put on the board table 560 different gloves. Okay. Stacked them up there, showed the different prices, and that visceral, tangible interaction, they got it. And that's what you just described there. They can actually get a pretty good idea based off this methodology to better understand what's really going on. You can't mask or hide or change it without seeing it. I mean, that's a great, powerful capability there. I like it.
Thank you. We've found it to be the biggest driver in growth for us is once leaders start to see that they can any day kind of listen to positive things or not so positive things, use it in meetings and business decisions. It's been a really powerful part of our platform.
So is this also used in compliance? Is there an area for compliance utilization here?
Absolutely. You know, healthcare conversations are obviously highly regulated, from HIPAA to you know, making sure that patients have informed consent, that they know that they're being recorded and that there's a disclaimer there, and any adverse event that might be reported on a medication that a customer is taking, that is captured. The FDA and CMS all are, you know, regulating these healthcare companies. And so a major component and use case of our product is for compliance leaders to understand not only what risks are occurring in these conversations, but to understand the context of why. You know, is this driven by a particular set of call center agents that just need to get, you know, brush up on their training? Or is the problem spread across the entire agent pool? And now we have a concern perhaps with the overall company's interpretation of the guideline. And so again, the product allows compliance leaders to get a lot smarter and more strategic in how they roll out compliance programs.
Yeah, I was just thinking about healthcare ratings and reports. You know, you look at all the different errors that come from accidents and injuries, infections, hospital generated problems like that, that if there's a system that a hospital could use to to gather that type of data would have value as well. So this is very interesting. The name Authentics, I like the name Authentics. Tell me about that. How did you come up with that?
You know, I didn't even think about starting my company until I had reached the ripe old age of 40. And at that stage in life, I had had enough corporate experiences that I came to kind of see what type of cultures I liked and what type of cultures I didn't like. And I wanted to build a company that the humans that worked in it could be their authentic self and leverage their strengths and not have to be perfect because no one is. So a big part of the name, it has to do with the values that I have and the type of culture I wanted to build. It also is reflective of our belief that listening to the actual literal voice of the customer is a more authentic way to understand them.
Well, that just resonates so well with us here at the university. You know, we have a number of leadership courses that we provide for physicians. We have an Alliance for Physician Leadership, and we have a Healthcare Leadership and Management Program. These are all executive ed programs. But one of the things we talk about in leadership, particularly servant leadership, we have kind of a ladder approach. And the first rung of that ladder is being authentic. That's at the very bottom. You start with being authentic and you show your vulnerability. You kind of move up another rung and then you go, well, what else do I need to be? You need to be accepting of ideas and insights. You need to be present. And the highest rung of that ladder is being useful. So as a leader, you want to be useful, but it really does start with being authentic. So I think the name for the company really speaks loudly for what you're trying to do. And I'm very excited about that. As an entrepreneur, as we wrap up here, I always like to get the business side of being an entrepreneur, especially not to be gender specific, but women leadership is really, really important from the diversity perspective. And starting a company and raising money for a company and running the company, tell us what it's like to be a leader in your area and how you've structured your company.
Yeah, you know, I often don't think so much about being a woman leader. I know that we're a fraction of the total number of entrepreneurs. And so I do find myself, you know, often the only woman in the room. I also grew up that way, you know, working in a healthcare industry. And so I guess that's been my normal. In terms of what it's been like to start a business, you know, when I left my corporate career, I was and still am a mother of four children, and my husband was a full-time stay-at-home dad. So to take that risk of, you know, I was the breadwinner and insurance carrier, and to take that risk was truly a family decision and a decision to rearrange and change up our lifestyle so that we could take this leap of faith together. I have found that, you know, when you follow your calling, the universe responds. And I have been so encouraged by the mentors, the advisors, the investors that have helped me along the way really build out my company. It was me, myself, and I in quarter four of 2018. And by 2019, we had a handful of annual contracts with some top 10 healthcare companies. And it's just been a wild ride and also one that's been truly humbling for me. I know that there are many people who don't get the opportunity to start a company like I have, and I've been very fortunate to have that opportunity. And I just hope that I can do something that truly makes a difference in the lives of others.
Well, I got to tell you, it's good to talk to another entrepreneur. I've been an entrepreneur myself, but it's even better when I have a Hoosier to Hoosier entrepreneur discussion. So this has been a real treat. I know there'll be a lot of excitement about what you're doing, and I know that your company is going to be hugely successful just because of the values that you've instilled into it. So it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast, and we look forward to following you in the future, Amy.
Thanks so much, Bob. It's been great to be here.